Blog Talk Radio.
Of the Pack Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
All right, I think we got our issues squared away. Pulse of the Pack is back. Sunday, February 10th. The first Sunday without NFL football since mid-August. I'm your host. I'm Jacob Westendorf. I am here, as always, with Jason Perrone. Jason, can you hear me?
I can. I always love how we do that intro, like it's the old-timer radio transistor from Houston to the moon. Yes, I hear you. All is well. We finally got everything up and running. It's a little bit weird. There's officially no football. So Super Bowl was a week ago today. That is over with. We all know how that ended. I joke because we know how much success this recent champion has had. But even with this particular Super Bowl championship, they are still, I guess technically, Jacob, you could say they're less than halfway to catching the storied Green Bay Packers. Would that not be accurate?
That would, unless we're giving them half titles for something, and we are not. 13 is not divisible by 6, for those of you that are mathematicians. So New England Patriots, I know it's cool. You think you're saying you got 6 Super Bowls and all that other nonsense that you guys are throwing out there, and that's great. It's been a great run. 6 is still less than 13, as I pointed out before the Super Bowl last week. We also have a guest this evening of T-Said TV, Pack-A-Day podcast, and a bunch of other stuff. Tyler, you can probably talk a little bit better about yourself than I ever could. But Tyler Grzegorik, and I didn't get that right the first time we spoke together, but I did this time, so I'm thankful for that. Tyler, fresh off a trip from, the middle of nowhere. I'm not quite sure where, honestly. This is one where I'm actually outnumbered. I have 2 Arizona residents in one show. How's it hanging?
It's great, if you listen to the Pack a Day and you also listen to this and you heard me on Saturday, I talked about getting out of town before spring training and baseball kicks off because that's my day job right now. So I just kind of got out of the city and went up to the mountains and hung out for a little bit, but I'm excited to be here and I'm glad that you guys are having me.
Yeah, you are the ticket operations manager for the Chicago Cubs, which I'm sure makes several people that listen to this show joyful. I know it will for Jason's son. Jason's son, JJ, actually is – well, Jason, your son changes teams more than I change shirts. So is he still a Cubs fan?
Oh, he's a Cubs fan. He's going to be a Cubs fan for the foreseeable future. So, that'd be loud and proud because, as I've joked, he's 5 years old. He'll be 6 this year. So according to him, in his lifetime, the Cubs win the World Series about once every 4 or 5 years.
Damn kid.
Spoiled, in my opinion.
Yeah. No doubt there. There are plenty of Cubs fans that I know that are in their 80s that are saying, what the hell, when they hear that statistic. But we are not here to talk baseball as much as I would love to, and I certainly could for an hour or so of time. We are here to talk about the Green Bay Packers. Not a lot in the way of news since Jason and I last spoke. Obviously, the Super Bowl happened. The Patriots won again. One of the most boring Super Bowls I've ever watched. I'm not going to say it's the worst. I'm not going to sit here and listen to people try and argue that it was great because it's defensive football and all that sort of stuff. That's fine. You have your own opinion. I personally found it to be not that entertaining, other than the fact that it was competitive from start to finish. But on my end, I wasn't surprised by the result. I definitely thought that Bill Belichick would be able to keep the Rams offense in check, and I was absolutely correct. If you want a shining example of why wins is not a stat for the quarterback, this game is a reason why, because no matter who had won this game, whether it was the Rams or the Patriots, the quarterback for either team did not play particularly well. Definitely some credit goes to the defense in that regard, but there was also a lot of bad offense that made some things look like good defense throughout the course of this game. So it's on NFL Network right now. If you guys are itching for a rewatch, they call it Super Bowl Classics. I certainly think that's an interesting way to put how that game went, but that's beside the point. Real quick, just one news bit that did happen since we last spoke. That is that Julius Peppers announced his retirement. Obviously, Julius Peppers played in Green Bay for about 3 years. Well, not about 3 years. During his time in Green Bay, the Packers played for two NFC titles. He was one of the best defensive players on the team. And in retrospect, for his entire career, he's one of the greatest defensive players of all time. So, Jason, let's start with you. Just appreciation for Julius Peppers. What's kind of your lasting image of him? Let's keep it positive, because I know some people have said that, unfortunately, his lasting image is going to be telling Morgan Burnett to slide in that championship game in Seattle. I don't want to relive that if I don't have to, even though I kind of just did. So on the positive end, I guess, since we are eternal optimists on this show, what's your lasting memory of Julius Peppers?
Well, for me, it was the first season he was with Green Bay. I think he had two interceptions for touchdowns, one of which came against the Vikings relatively early on, and his athleticism kind of flashed. So that was one. I do have to say, I mean, I would say this is still keeping it positive. I mean, who could forget just months before he would join the Packers, him getting leveled by John Kuhn and Roots Aaron Rodgers throwing a game winner against the Bears. Now, he was obviously not in a Packers uniform at that point, but it was only fitting that he would then switch sides. I mean, I really appreciate the athlete that he is. I mean, he's stepping away from football for his own reasons, but there's no reason for us to believe that he could not still be playing at a high level and racking up double-digit sacks. He's just a freak of nature. And to see him do it for as long as he did and miss as few games as he did was just incredible. And I'm glad, even though it was a very short period of time, that the Packers had him on their side, and they had two NFC Championship game appearances with him as a member of their defense. Not saying he was the reason for it, but he was 2 for 3 in terms of being on the Packers defense. So will always be remembered and respected highly by this particular fan, no doubt.
Absolutely agree. Tyler, you got anything else to add real quick on Mr. Peppers?
Yeah. You know, he's one of the first players I remember watching, like, from their time of being drafted into the league and then, you know, watching their entire career unfold and then ultimately retiring here recently. And it was awesome when we found out, me and my buddies, when we found out that he got signed by the Packers, because obviously he had played in Chicago, he had played in Carolina before that, and he was just a force, a freak of nature. And it was just awesome to have him on the Packers and doing that for Green Bay. And I remember how they wanted to move him around the defensive front and put him on the inside and put him on the outside. And I think he even played the elephant position that they had for a while. And, you know, I guess particularly for me, I thought that Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers is one of the best tandems that they've had in a long time. You know, and this isn't really pertinent information, but I felt the need to go out and get myself like a shirt that said Assault and Peppers, because I was just so excited about these two guys rushing the quarterback every day. So, he's going to be missed. And, yeah, like you said, he's one of the greatest defensive players of all time.
Absolutely. And in regards to myself, one of my favorite players, even when he was on Chicago, it was hard not to appreciate how good he was. And then I actually had a chance to stand next to Julius Peppers when he came to Green Bay for that first year. And I've said this a million times, bar none, he is the most impressive physical specimen I have ever seen in person, that big, long arms, that fast. The interception you mentioned, Jason, against the Vikings, he ran away from Jerick McKinnon. No small feat there when it comes to speed. Jet McKinnon is one of the fastest players in the NFL, and Julius Peppers is a 280-pound defensive end, ran away from him. They did some goofy stuff when he was in Green Bay. They played him at tight end in that one game in New Orleans. I won't forget that because I was screaming at the television when they did that. I wasn't a particular fan of that move. But it seemed like, you know, very similar to Charles Woodson, obviously didn't culminate in a Super Bowl title, but very similar from the standpoint of if the Packers defense made a big play during his tenure here, Julius Peppers is the one who made it. And I know I mentioned the championship game and I didn't want to relive it, but the Packers, Julius Peppers might have been the best player on the field during that championship game against Seattle, obviously before the no more slide sign that he gave. He was phenomenal. He's a great guy by all accounts. And, you know, the times that I've gotten to interact with him, he's been super cool too. So that's a positive. It's an extra. He'll be a first ballot Hall of Famer. I think there's no question about that. But that is not what we are here to talk about all day long, because honestly, we could probably dedicate this entire show to Julius Peppers if we wanted to, but we will not. Jason, I also got to say, I love the bringing up of Rodgers to Cobb. Obviously, that's in our intro. It's one of my favorite plays in the history of the Green Bay Packers is Julius Peppers getting, I can't even believe it, the greatest play of John Kuhn's career is knocking Peppers down and giving Rodgers a chance to make that play down the field to Randall Cobb, because realistically, if that play happens with somebody else in the backfield, or if Kuhn can't make that play, Rodgers is probably sacked, and we're not even talking about one of those plays. We're talking about how they lost to the Bears at Soldier Field on that particular day. Let's move forward a little bit, though, guys. We didn't because of various different reasons, but we were going to originally do this show on February 6th. And anybody who's a Packers fan knows exactly why we wanted to do this show on February 6th. It is the anniversary date of the last Super Bowl that the Packers played in and ultimately won over the Pittsburgh Steelers, 31-25 over Pittsburgh, and permanently tattooed on my leg, something that I'll never forget. I was 19 years old when it happened. Jason, you were probably in like your mid-40s when that happened, and Tyler, we're about the same age, so we're probably looking at about the same time frame. I'm sorry, what?
Oh, that wasn't me. But yeah, I was actually going to say mid-50s, so you're giving me a lot of extra credit. I appreciate that. You know, I have been trying to fight Father Time a little more fiercely lately, so I appreciate that.
There you go. Just a spring chicken then when they won that title. But that's what they did. Let's kind of go through that game a little bit. Like I mentioned, there's not a whole lot to, you know, recap. It's kind of a dead period time of year, and you know, we're not the Detroit Lions. We're fans of a team that actually has some history, and it's been a lot of fun. That season was a lot of fun. To recap that real quick before we get into the actual Super Bowl, the Packers finished that year 10-6. They were 8-6 going into their last two games after a humiliating defeat at the hands of the Detroit Lions. And this is before the Lions kind of have the Packers number now, which is weird to say, but this is long before that was the case. The Packers at the time, it was pretty much a given. You were supposed to beat the Lions, and they didn't. They lost 7-3. Aaron Rodgers left with a concussion. They actually went 8-6 after losing to New England with Matt Flynn, a game they very easily could have won in Foxborough, but they didn't. The Patriots that season were 14-2, ended up going 1-done in the playoffs. I'm still not 100% sure how they lost that game to the New York Jets, but they did, robbing us of a chance to see Rodgers and Brady in the Super Bowl. That was obviously the Packers held up their end of the bargain that time. That's one that sticks out. The other one, obviously, 2014. But they were 8-6. They won their last two games against the Giants. They blew the doors off the Giants at Lambeau Field and then beat the Chicago Bears at home to get to the playoffs. And then they went on a run that doesn't happen that often anymore. I think the more time that distance itself from that Super Bowl run, you realize how special that was, because the Packers won three games on the road in a row just to get to the Super Bowl. And to do that now, I mean, if you look at it, wild card teams don't really make the Super Bowl anymore. They haven't in a really long time. The last wild card team to do it was the Baltimore Ravens, and that was a few seasons ago as well. But the Packers, they went into Philadelphia. They won there. They beat Michael Vick on a dramatic Tremont Williams interception in the end zone, essentially ending the game After that, it was a blowout in Atlanta. Tremont Williams with another big play, a dramatic interception return for a touchdown to essentially, I mean, I don't know when you guys felt the most comfortable that that game was over, but I remember very vividly thinking, not only is this game over, but I thought at that very moment the Packers were going to the Super Bowl. And I didn't know if they were going to win it yet, but I was very sure that they were going to the Super Bowl after Williams was dancing in the end zone in Atlanta. NFC Championship game, B.J. Raji shaking his ass in the Soldier Field end zone. Memory I will never lose, especially being somebody from this particular area. That was one of the most stressful weeks of my life, waiting for the Bears and Packers of all teams to kick off for a chance to go to the Super Bowl. And they did. And now they're playing the Pittsburgh Steelers. So let's kind of kick it off a little bit. Guys, I don't know how you felt before that game started. You may not even remember. But if you do, feel free to chime in a little bit. But I remember thinking when that game started, or before that game started, even during the week leading up to it, I was surprisingly confident. I very much felt – I knew the Steelers had the best defense in football, but I didn't think they were going to be able to stop Green Bay's offense because the Steelers really traditionally under Dick LeBeau and even now struggle against teams that can spread them out and really place their third wide receiver – on their third best corner. I thought the Packers would be able to hold up well enough in pass protection and give Jordy Nelson and James Jones an opportunity to have a big game. And the way they were using Greg Jennings to get matched up that way was helpful as well. I was really confident. If you had asked me, I was very superstitious during that playoff run as well. If you had asked me, I would have told you Green Bay is going to win. And I felt very confident in believing that. As the game started, I was still very confident, even though I was a nervous wreck the day of. Tyler, what were your feelings going into that game? Again, like I mentioned, we're the same age, so you didn't really get the full experience of Super Bowl 31. You probably remember it, but you were a little kid just like I was. So you probably don't remember being nervous or anything like that before that game started. But going into that game, were you confident Green Bay was going to be able to win that game?
So here's the thing about my Super Bowl experience that year. I was actually working. I was a pizza delivery driver, and so I was working, and I had brought a little mobile TV in with me to work. And I was actually really nervous going into the game just because of all the things that had happened. And this was my first, like, true experience in this type of position. Obviously, the Packers, they went to Super Bowls in the late 90s, but I was not really old enough to remember those at all, at least vividly. But this game specifically, it will always be etched in my memory because I was watching the game at work. And if you know, all my close friends know this about me, but I have a curse. I always miss kickoff. If I'm going somewhere or I'm doing something, I always miss kickoff. It doesn't matter. Something always goes wrong. So I missed the kickoff and I was already really upset. So I told my boss, I said, hey, like, I'm staying in here. I'm watching this game. So I actually watched the game, my shift, and I had to drive home during halftime, and I missed kickoff in the third quarter as well. But all I can remember is just being nervous with every single snap, every single, you know, reception, just every single little thing was amplified during that moment, or those moments, I should say. And I don't know if anything will ever replicate those feelings. Obviously, some of the games that the Packers have had since have been pretty nerve-wracking and very upsetting. There was nothing like it, and I'm ready to experience that again. I think I've emotionally recovered from it, but just a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and I'm fully ready to experience that all again.
I'm with you. I think every Packers fan would agree with that as well. Jason, you did experience Super Bowl 31. I won't make a Super Bowl 1 and 2 joke, but you did experience actually the high end and the low end because I was still really young when they lost Super Bowl 32. So you kind of had seen both ends of that spectrum. And as anybody who listens to this show and anybody who knows you, and I know you pretty well, you are traditionally, I don't want to call it negative, but you're not always the most optimistic, I guess is what I should say. Or you worry a lot more than maybe the average fan would about stuff. So going into that game, what was your confidence level? And as the game started, did that wane at all?
Well, we're talking about a championship, so that's a different situation. You get to the Super Bowl, then you deserve the confidence. You deserve the backing of your fans 100%. So at that point, all bets are off in terms of hedging and negativity. And I know that when they went into Seattle in 2014, I just refused to believe that anything good could happen, and we won't go any further than that. But I was very confident. Just that team was on a run. They were on a mission, and it was obvious that they could beat anybody. I mean, they had just done what seemed impossible. They won three very tough road games, ending with one against a division opponent in Chicago, which, you know, if you want to talk about all of the factors that could potentially go against them and for what they had to overcome, I was confident almost the entire game. I mean, you know, a lot of Miller and Bud Light helped a lot that day too, keep me very happy and a little bit more carefree than usual. But it was I didn't even compare it to 97 and 98 because it was a different team, different quarterback, although, you know, interestingly enough, we still are only one quarterback removed from the guy that won those two, and that was forever and a half ago. I mean, that was a really long time ago. But to get back there, it was, you know, it would have been easy to say, okay, last time they were here, we had the huge disappointing loss against the Broncos, and they let Terrell Davis score, and they couldn't go down and match and all that kind of stuff. But it all goes out the window because each team is its own unique beast. You know, I guess I could say that at this point because they haven't had any back-to-back appearances since 97, 98. I mean, Patriots fans are probably the only ones who understand any sort of continuity. You know, every other team seems to have to wait a really long time. But it was a very satisfying thing. In fact, it was just on TV, on NFL Network yesterday, and watching it really kind of opened my eyes to the receivers that they had, the offense that they had. You know, they had a murderer's row of pass catchers. And Aaron Rodgers just looked so stout and just, you know, I'm not saying he doesn't now, but obviously as time goes on and things change, you know, he's had a couple of injuries and unfortunately the last couple of seasons haven't gone very well. Just to watch a healthy prime Rodgers at that point in the season was just a treat, a huge treat. So, you know, I mean, obviously we want to see him get back and hopefully they can in the next couple of years that he's got, but I mean, it's going to have been so long by the time they get back again that, you know, it's going to stand on its own. It's going to be on its own merit, and it's going to be hopefully a great game. But no, I mean, you know, I'm a completely different person on that day. You know, you get to a championship, you get to a Super Bowl. Unfortunately, unlike Lions fans, and for a very long time, unlike a lot of Vikings fans who were born after what 1980, they don't know the feeling. So can revel in that as well.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Obviously to go into that, the beginning of the Super Bowl, everything that leads up to it, when your team's not in it, it does feel like a bit of a nuisance, just all the pregame coverage and all that stuff. I soaked it all up. I wanted every part of this experience just in case it was the only one, the Packers played in. Obviously I hope now in my lifetime, that's not the case. I think we all obviously would hope that, but you know, and then I remember like just the wave of emotions that hit. I'll never forget it was Sam Elliott introduced the Packers. That was something that sent chills down my spine to have him introduced. Like, that's my team playing in this game. And it's here. It's real. It's not something that, you know, I was thinking of, dreaming of, wishing of. Something else I could tell you, a little anecdote, is every year on my birthday from the time I was 9 years old until I was 19, whenever you blow out your candles, they always said, make a wish. I always wish that the Packers would win the Super Bowl. And my, you know, my birthday falls right around the time football season starts. So I thought it made sense. So anytime I made a wish, that's what it was. And I did the same thing that year. So here it was, a chance for them to win the Super Bowl. And then really the game kind of started. I know that I'm kind of an emotional fan anyways, very excited on big plays and stuff like that. But I also remember very early in that game, living and dying on every single play. And then thinking to myself, you've got to settle the hell down. Otherwise this isn't going to be enjoyable by any stretch. It worked a little bit, but not really. I was very, very much into that game. Obviously it's the Super Bowl. But then the game started, you know, the Packers, they draw first blood. They hit a big touchdown to Jordy Nelson on a 3rd and 1 down the field. Nelson makes a big play, and then there's obviously the iconic picture that's surfaced since then of Rodgers and Nelson shoulder bumping. And then immediately following was the Nick Collins pick 6. And Nick Collins, obviously, career cut too short. Don't want to get too much into that. But Collins has the pick 6. And I remember he intercepts, and then I, like, left my body or something. I don't know what happened exactly there, but everything there didn't seem real. Like, I'm thinking to myself, oh, my God, like, we have an interception. They're already at least in field goal range, and then he kept running. I'm like, it's at least going to be 10-0, if not 14, in the Super Bowl against a team who obviously – here's the other part of the story is, even though I was confident Green Bay was going to win, I lived in Bears country, and Bears fans have an inferiority complex about the Packers anyways. You know, the phrase the kids use nowadays is rent-free, and that was even more the case in that week, in those 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl, because we had just went into Soldier Field and beat them and to go to the Super Bowl, a game that they felt they should have played in. And I heard every excuse in the book about how Green Bay didn't deserve to win that game and blah, blah, blah. Now I'm looking at 14-0, and as Collins dives in the end zone, like, I didn't even freak out. I just kind of stood up and was numb, because now I'm thinking they have a 14-point lead in the Super Bowl, and they just have this much time now to hang on. Jason, was your experience on that, just the pick 6 specifically, was it similar, or was it like a normal – I mean, I don't know if there's a normal pick 6, but, you know, was it a normal reaction that you would normally have, or what were your feelings in that particular moment?
Well, it was a normal reaction for me. I don't know if anyone else would have considered it normal. I think I sprained a vocal cord in the process. Nick Collins is one of my favorite players on that defense, because I happened to, for the 2 minutes that I played football, I was a safety. And so he's wearing 36. I grew up watching Butler, you know, the whole thing. He was an All-Pro. He was a huge part of that whole process. I always say that Super Bowls tend to kind of bring seasons full circle. So when you watch the team that wins or the team that loses, you know, what wins it, what loses it for them, it tends to kind of be the same story that got them there. And so Nick Collins making that play is no surprise at all. You know, obviously the setup of it was Howard Green hitting Big Ben in the arm, and Green was a midseason ad. So, you know, just there's so many storylines to how that season came together. But that play was that's one of the reasons why I think if there's an argument to be made, and I think it's going to be a really tough case to make, if they want to talk about Nick Collins and, like, you know, being in the Hall of Fame, it's a long shot. But the determination on that play, because there's a lot of guys who, you know, in today's game too, especially, you see a lot of sliding, a lot of kneeling. I'm not making any NFC Championship game jokes here. I'm literally just saying, you know, there's a lot of guys that take the safe route and say, hey, I don't want to lose the ball. I don't want to lose the opportunity for us to get at least 3 points, hopefully 6. But the determination that he showed to get in there, I mean, it was no small feat for him to get into the end zone. There was a lot of resistance, and he finally gets in. And it was an incredible thing. But it was like, you know, I remember in 96 when they went against the Patriots and Favre threw the touchdown pass to Andre Rison, and you just knew at that point, okay, this team's ready. They're primed to go. Like, at that point right there, I was like, all right, they've got a lot of mojo on their side. They're going to be really tough to beat today. And that's when I really started believing, like, there's a trophy coming to Green Bay. And that play obviously was a huge catalyst for it.
That it was. Tyler, you're going to have to, like, correct me if you were working or delivering a pizza, because I do know something else that's a fact is one of my good friends actually owns a pizza business here. And he told me the busiest they've ever been is when the Packers played in the Super Bowl, which is interesting to me for a lot of different reasons. Because this, I mean, there's a lot of Packers fans here in Rockford, but it's definitely not the majority. It's majority Bears fans. So forgive me if we're reminiscing about stuff that you never saw live. But did you have a reaction? Did you see the play? Those sorts of things.
Yeah, so I was a delivery driver. But that specific day, I actually requested to be the dishwasher, so I could set up that little mobile TV in the back. And so I was able to catch, I would probably say, about 60% of the first half, you know, at least watching it. And then just kind of, so it was really hard for me to get into the game at that point. But once I had left and gone home and was watching it with my friends and family, just, you know, like you guys were saying, it's normal for me, but when there's a big play, just hooting and hollering and I don't care who knows it type thing. I was just so into the game, and I was so ready for them to bring the Lombardi Trophy back to Lambeau.
Yeah, I did not feel that way yet. You know, it's not like I mentioned earlier, the Tremont Williams interception in Atlanta. I knew Green Bay was going to the Super Bowl at that point. It was so early in the game. I actually have the play up right now on YouTube. There's about 3 minutes left in the first quarter when Collins crosses the goal line. So all I'm thinking at that point is, man, like if we blow this, we're talking about a 14-point lead that we had and blew. And that actually ended up being the biggest deficit that the Steelers would face that day. The Steelers would get a field goal shortly after. It was 14-3, and then they had a chance. They were driving to make it 14-10. He threw an interception to Jarrett Bush. And Jarrett Bush is, as far as cornerbacks go, one of the worst players that I've ever seen play. So that was kind of the moment. I got like four texts at that point that was saying, like, they have to be destined to win if Jarrett Bush is out here making plays, which is funny because later, obviously, NFL Films has their recap of the Super Bowl, which is awesome, every single year. And you can hear Greg Jennings, like, say to one of the position coaches, oh, Jarrett Bush is making plays. Now, he probably didn't mean it the way that I thought he did, but the way I thought he did was, yeah, crappy Jarrett Bush is out here making plays. And Green Bay responded with that with, honestly, one of the best throws of Aaron Rodgers' career. The touchdown pass to Jennings made it 21-3. At that point, Tyler, are you thinking blowout?
You know, I think naive 19-year-old myself was like, yeah, Packers are going to blow the Steelers out of the water. But I now know that no game is out of reach until it's over. And I just had that pit in my stomach the whole time that was like, I don't think it's enough. I don't think it's enough. Like, it just – and I think that mentality has actually kind of carried with me ever since, because obviously the Steelers kind of storm on back and they make it a game, keep it close at least. And I just think that that goes to show, like, you know, no game is over until it's over. And at that time, I did think that it was a very good lead, and I was very, very excited. But at the same time, I just knew that it was maybe not too good to be true, but I just knew that it wasn't over yet.
Jason, I've sat with you and talked with you during games where Green Bay was winning 30-0, and you were still worried they could blow that lead. So I imagine this case was no different.
Technically, that's true. Because I figured, you know, the Steelers got there for a reason. They weren't going to just get boat race like that. I mean, I felt comfortable with the lead and with the defense that they had. Now, at that point, I don't believe that halftime had approached yet. Correct me if I'm wrong. Because I didn't start getting really nervous until both Sam Shields and Charles Woodson were out. So that was when I started getting a little bit nervous. But I felt like Pittsburgh could put some points on the board and make a run. You know, they just hadn't woken up yet. I mean, they'd won two Super Bowls prior to that with the same quarterback. So I know it was with different head coaches, but, you know, they were only 2 years removed from their last championship win over the, thank God, the Arizona Cardinals. So I just 21-3 against that defense knew was going to be tough. You wanted all the padding, but I wasn't popping any champagne at that point. But, I mean, it was a good position to be in. I kind of thought back to, like, the 1995 playoffs when they went into San Francisco and took on the world champions 49ers and got up to a 21-0 lead just because of a couple of great defensive plays and Favre had him rolling, and that was like the first really big win that led you to believe and know that, okay, this team's a championship team, and then the next season, of course, they would go on to win it. Kind of reminded me of that, where you've got a team that's doing all the right things on the biggest stage, which is what you want. That's what you always want to see, is your team show up to play in a big game like that. You know, it was kind of the opposite of what we saw last week. I mean, there was really not a whole lot from either team last week, but like the opposite of what we saw from the Rams last week, where you spend all that time and energy and you have a magical season and an incredible run to get yourself there, and you overcome the obstacles that you did against the Saints, the NFC Championship game, and then that, you know. So
it was good to see Green Bay build up a lead like that. And they never trailed in that entire game. That was one of the reasons why. You know, the pick six, and then you've got that incredible throw from Rodgers and Jennings hanging on with Troy Polamalu barreling down on him. Just so many moments from that game that you forget about. When you watch it again, you realize how incredible that just that one game, that championship was, and how many moments it took for the Packers to win it, even as good as they were, to have to make plays like that was – it was a real treat to watch, for sure.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was at. You know, I mentioned, you know, thinking maybe they could blow them out, but, you know, Tyler mentioned the phrase never enough, and, yeah, that's kind of where I was at. It's never enough. As the song goes, it's never enough. So that's kind of where I was at. Jason, you segued it a little bit. And then, you know, after everything pretty much goes right for Green Bay for two quarters, in about a four-minute stretch to end the first half, if you could name it out short of Aaron Rodgers exiting with an injury, everything went wrong. Donald Driver hurt his ankle. Charles Woodson broke his collarbone. Sam Shields hurt his shoulder. He kind of bounced back and forth through the rest of that game on if he could play or not, which stuns me in the second half that the Steelers didn't just go pass happy and let Ben do his thing with – it was basically Tremont Williams, Pat Lee, and Jarrett Bush. Pat Lee obviously stunk, and Jarrett Bush, I mentioned earlier, the Steelers didn't do that. We'll get to that in the second half. But just about everything went wrong. It's 21-10 at halftime. And it would have been very easy because you could tell – during that playoff run that Green Bay was very much, I mean, obviously they're playing to win the Super Bowl because every team wants to win the Super Bowl, but it was very important to them to win for Donald Driver, for Charles Woodson. Something else about that run that is crazy, great, awesome, whatever superlative you want to use for me is, you know, I mentioned the championship game. Charles Woodson obviously gives that iconic speech that'll live in Packers lore forever. Something about that that is great to me is when Woodson was talking, you know, Joe Flacco made a comment once when Ray Lewis, now granted, Ray Lewis is a blowhard, and I don't know how much credibility he has, and Charles Woodson has infinitely more credibility than Ray Lewis does, but Charles Woodson's talking, and he's giving that speech. Nobody's on their phones. Nobody's looking around the locker room. Like, everybody's eyes are glued to Charles Woodson as he gives that speech. So it would have been easy for them to get stuck in the emotion of that and really fall apart, and they kind of did a little bit to start the second half. Steelers take the ball. Obviously the announcement comes that Woodson's out and Shields is questionable and Driver is out. So there's two really big contributors. And then Sam Shields, who was actually a big contributor for that team as well for that season. And the Steelers take the ball in the first half or the first play or first drive of the second half. They go right down the field. They score a touchdown and Rashard Mendenhall just runs through the defense. And I remember very explicitly, you guys are saints as far as I'm concerned, because you guys are telling me you watched this game with people. The only people in my house were my parents because I lived there, so I had no choice in that regard. The girl I was dating at the time and one of my friends, and that was it. And I remember very explicitly saying, we are bleeped after that happened. And now that was an emotional reaction, no doubt there, but I really could start to feel the game slip away a little bit because it was 21-3. Now it's 21-17. One of our best players is out. James Jones is dropping a touchdown pass again in that playoff run. James, I love you, man, but come on, man. You made those games in the playoffs, two at least specifically, a lot harder than they really had to be. At that time, I mean, Tyler, are you thinking this thing's slipping away? Can they recover? Because you're talking now 21-17. James Jones just dropped a touchdown pass, and they're punting, and the Steelers now have a chance to take their first lead of the game. Are you thinking it's slipping away?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a high-pressure moment. It's a high-pressure situation. Like you mentioned earlier, you were living and dying on every single play. When things start to kind of compound themselves and just kind of become a snowball that's rolling down the hill, you know, you're trying to get out of the way of it, but it's a pretty big snowball. So you're just sitting there hoping that it's not going to hit you. And at the same time, yeah, I think you start to think, like, are they going to do it? They're going to lose this big lead that they had. And it was just such an emotional roller coaster at that point, because not only was Charles Woodson out of the game, you know, the emotional leader, arguably the best player on the entire team. You know, you could probably make an argument for Aaron Rodgers at that point, but I would argue that it was Charles Woodson. And just in general, the atmosphere kind of stunk. You know, it was a much heavier setting at that point, and you started to get that bigger sense of doubt in your stomach.
Definitely. Jason?
Yeah, I started waning a little bit because I was like, okay, the Steelers are going to make a run. There's no way it's going to end 21-3, and they're not going to have this huge lead. And then they started making a run. They started getting making some adjustments. And then I was wondering if the corner situation wasn't going to be the death of the team. And it was like, remember I talked about narratives and how storylines kind of repeat themselves and come full circle? Well, if you'll remember that year, the Packers lost a lot of players. They had a lot of injuries. They had guys that did come back. They had some guys that did not come back. They had a lot of guys that ended up on injured reserve. At that time, they didn't have the designated to return rule yet. So if a guy went on IR, he was done. They didn't have Nick Barnett. They didn't have JerMichael Finley, for example. You know, they lost those guys. And now you got Charles Woodson, who's not coming back, and he's one of your prime players. He's not just a great player on the field, but he's one of the heart and souls of the defense. So how's that going to affect the players out there, who were there, and all the things were there that could have led to the collapse, you know? And then I would imagine it's probably where you're going with it, but, you know, and then comes the absolutely famous play by Ryan Pickett and Clay Matthews that, you know, when that happened, all the things that were worrying me and were kind of, you know, feeling like we're going to let me down, reminded me that this team had so many guys step up and play huge roles, and Desmond Bishop being one of them. I was a huge, huge fan of Bishop getting on the field. I say the Nick Barnett injury, although it was unfortunate, was probably a blessing in disguise, because Desmond Bishop played his ass off that season. And I was, you know, and he left a little bit too soon with an injury, and he was a great football player, the exact kind of guy that I keep waiting for the Packers to add to their defense, just an absolute dog. So at that point, everything ended up being okay. But there was that time period that you're talking about where I started wondering if things weren't going to start to go south a little bit, because that's what happened. Totally different team and situation. But that's what happened with the Packers-Broncos. You know, Green Bay had a lead. They were hugely favored coming into that game, and everyone figured that Favre and the team were going to find a way, and Reggie and the defense were going to find another way to pull it out and win. But it didn't happen that time. And so was it going to be another instance of Big Ben and the Steelers just, you know, absolutely daggering through us? You know, because when they won their last championship against the Cardinals, remember, that was the Santonio Holmes toe tap 3-0 with Roethlisberger running the offense. Nothing is really safe.
No, Big Ben is actually, in my opinion, become one of the most underrated quarterbacks in this era of the NFL. But, you know, Jason, you mentioned where it's going to segue, because now it's 21-17. Sean Swisham misses a field goal by a country mile, and the game just kind of goes, for lack of a better term. It's kind of back and forth with no team really doing a whole lot. The Packers' defense, to their credit, held up well enough in that time to buy some time for their offense to find their mojo again. And it took a defensive play. You mentioned the iconic play of Ryan Pickett and Clay Matthews, a picture that is forever framed in my basement, Clay Matthews forcing that fumble on Rashard Mendenhall. Before that, they actually showed, well, after the play happened, but they showed Kevin Green, the linebackers coach, is talking to Clay, and he says, you know, nobody's stepping up and rallying the troops. Charles Woodson's gone. You know, it's time. And I wasn't that far removed from my football career at the time. I was ready to run through a freaking wall when I heard that. Like, hell yeah, let's go. I can play linebacker in the NFL. And then I remembered really quickly that I wasn't athletic or big or fast enough and I would die. But it was – I mean, I still have goosebumps right now thinking about that speech, that somebody gave that. And then one play later, says Wayne Larrabee called it at the time the biggest play of the game to date. Clay Matthews forces a fumble of Rashard Mendenhall. The Steelers were in Packers territory as this happened, again, threatening to take the lead away that Green Bay had built. And – after that play is over, the Packers go right down the field. Rodgers hits Greg Jennings in the corner of the end zone to make it 28-17. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, 11 minutes and 57 seconds left. It's the longest 11 minutes and 57 seconds of my life, and I know that. So buckle up. Let's go. But Green Bay has a two-possession lead in that time frame. The Steelers, obviously, then, of course, go right down the field. They score a touchdown. It's 28-25. And a beautiful throw from Ben to Mike Wallace to cap that touchdown drive there, obviously. And then the Packers go down the field. Actually, they get the ball back. They get sacked on first down. And Brian Bulaga is hit with a false start penalty on a 3rd and 5. And it's 3rd and 10 against the Blitzburg Steelers defense. James Harrison, Lamar Woodley, James Ferrier, Casey Hampson, Brett Kiesel, so many good players on that defense. And I'm thinking at my time, like, okay, we got to make one, you know, one big play here. This is the biggest third down of my lifetime. If you're really looking at it, it's the biggest third down that I'd ever watched the Packers face to date. And Jason, we've done this show on this particular time frame before. You know full well how I feel about this throw. It's one of my favorite plays in the history of the Green Bay Packers. Had Greg Jennings housed it, I think we're talking about maybe the best throw of Rodgers' career, obviously the best play of Greg Jennings' career, but he throws a missile for 31 yards on 3rd and 10, right over the middle of the field. Something else about that play, again, NFL Films is awesome, guys. If you guys don't watch the stuff that Films puts out, you need to, because something you got from that game is the Steelers are on the sidelines, and they're yelling, it's going to 85, it's going to 85. Obviously, that was Jennings at the time. And Jennings goes right up the seam. Ike Taylor in good position, but Rodgers throws a missile over the middle. Jennings gets a huge first down at that point. Before we get too much into that drive yet, Tyler, on that throw in particular, just off the top of your head, I mean, where does that rank in terms of throws you've seen Aaron Rodgers make?
Oh, man, I'm racking my brain on this one. You know, I think when you start to factor in the moment and just the situation in general and the urgency that had to be had on that specific play, definitely got to be up in the top 3 or 5 off the top of my head. You know, I'm trying to think of all the big throws that he's had. I'm not sure if it tops a Hail Mary, one of the Hail Mary throws, just because of the typical difficulty of those types of throws in general. But it's definitely up there with those, if not surpassing maybe one of the lesser Hail Marys. Like I said, I think this is one that we'd have to get with Dusty Evely about and see what he would have to say, because I'd be really curious where he would rank this amongst his Rodgers throws.
Yeah, that would be – I might have to ask him one of these days. I do know that Rodgers called it an America's game. Now, granted, this was made 8 years ago, but he said the best throw of his career. To that point, obviously, he hadn't completed any Hail Marys or anything like that. Jason, am I overrating this throw, or, like, am I being ridiculous? Or, I mean, how impressive was this on your end?
Well, at the time, I wasn't cognizant of – I didn't appreciate the throw at the time because I just wanted the Packers to keep moving the ball, and I didn't care anymore. It was getting to the point where I was like, okay, my nerves are going to be shot soon. I need them to pull away and just give a comfortable lead and just keep the ball moving and keep it away from the Steelers so that we can celebrate the championship. Because I had, you know, I mean, it was adrenaline dump for me. I'd been on so many highs and so many lows up to that point. I didn't care how they got it done. I just wanted them to get it done. But then going back and watching it and looking at it, I mean, you know, Aaron Rodgers has made a career out of throws like this. One of my favorite throws that he's ever made was actually his first touchdown pass as a starter, week 1, 2008, against the Vikings to Corey Hall in the end zone. And it was just the arm angle of the throw, and it was his first touchdown pass, and it was the first sign to all of us that this was, you know, this being the Super Bowl that we're talking about right now, was possible. We can get there with this guy. So I had to go back in retrospect and look at it. But there was a game 3 seasons later in Minnesota. I was in the house for it. So unfortunately, one of the downsides to being in the house for a game is you don't get the same angles you get on TV. But Rodgers made 2 throws in that game, one of which was a touchdown to Jordy Nelson. That was – he was blanketed, and the throw could only be and go in one spot. And that's what Aaron Rodgers, you know, he's done in the past. It's been a long time since we've seen it, and I hope that he still has some of that magic left in him. But the arm angles and the accuracy were just phenomenal, and that's what got the Packers to the championship game. So once again, here's another example of something coming back full circle. You know, and it's a critical time in the game where they need a conversion, and they need to pick up some yards and try to pick up some points. And he just throws an absolute dime. You know, I mean, to watch that game back afterwards with all the highlights, you know, I mean, it was the opposite of what we just saw last week. There were so many great things to watch from that game, and it's one that you'll always want to keep handy either on DVD or whatever medium you watch, because it's a timeless thing to watch all the throws that were made that season, that day. That ended up being obviously one of the greats. But at the time, I just, combination of adrenaline dump and too much beer and all the things, you know, all the people running around and going on. And I can tell you at that point, Jacob, you talked about like a very quiet household that you tried to maintain. If I had it to do all over again, and if it ever happens again, I'll probably go your route. And I think you'll be able to count the number of people that are around me on one hand and have a few fingers left over.
Well, I can tell you this, if it happens again, either you're coming to Rockford or I'm going to Arizona, and we'll figure it out from there if it happens again. So everybody that's heard that, hold us accountable. Jennings makes the catch. Obviously, the Packers get down inside the five and have a chance to put the game away, and all I'm thinking to myself is please score a touchdown, because I didn't want the defense to have a chance. Not that I wasn't confident in them, because it was a very good defense that year, but I didn't want them to have a chance to blow it. And Rodgers' last pass comes right off the fingertips of Jordy Nelson. Tough play. Rodgers maybe missed the throw a little bit, but Nelson had a chance to make the catch and didn't. It's 31-25, and the Steelers are now backed up inside of their 15-yard line, I believe, at the time, after a holding penalty on the kickoff. So the Packers now, there's 2:07 left. I'll never forget looking at the scoreboard thinking that's a lot of bleeping time. And Packers now have a chance to get us. If they get one stop, they win the Super Bowl. Like, that's all I'm thinking at that time. One stop, we win the Super Bowl. And the first two plays of the game, or the drive, the Steelers, like, make a couple of first downs, and they're kind of moving a little bit. And I just remember thinking, you know, Jason, you've referenced the Super Bowl that happened a couple years prior. That is the only thing that was in my head during that last drive was, Ben has the ball. He's backed up just like he was when they played the Cardinals, and he's going to rip my heart out and feed it to me. So I kept talking confidence levels, guys. Tyler, Ben's got the ball, 2 minutes left. He's backed up. Green Bay's got a good defense, but if he scores a touchdown, they win, because this is the time when, obviously, extra points were right on the goal line. They were pretty much a given. How are you feeling then? Is Green Bay taking this trophy home, or are you just scared poopless?
I honestly believe it was the latter. And if I'm being even more honest, that entire sequence towards the end of that game is very much a blur in my head and in my memory, just from the pure rushes of adrenaline and, you know, as I mentioned, the roller coaster of emotions that not only I was going through, but everybody around me. And I think I'm like you guys. If I have to go through something like this again, it's going to be a very select few people, because it's going to sound weird, but such an intimate moment. And like, you just, I want to be focused on the event. And that's what I was. I was very focused on what was going on. And I was just, I was trying to take it all in. And it was just, there was just so much going on that I don't think one specific emotion or feeling describes it.
Well, that's, I guess, where we differ a little bit, Tyler, because mine was fear, and fear of nothing else. Obviously, it doesn't happen. It's 4th and 5, and I am pacing in the living room, and all I can think of is, now I was just saying one stop and we win. Now it's one play and we win. And the last pass went to Mike Wallace. He threw it at Tremont Williams, which I don't really understand either. The pass fell incomplete, and I dive-bombed on the floor, and I don't think a grown man has ever cried that much in the history of mankind. So sheer jubilation, sheer joy, no control over my emotions anymore. It was done. We did it. And it's something that I will never forget. It is, at the time, when I was 19, it was the happiest day of my life. Obviously, there's a few things that have happened since then that have changed that. It's probably closer to like 5th now. But from a football standpoint, the Packers could win another Super Bowl. Nothing could ever top this. And that's just because it was the first one. And you always remember the first one. It's more important than any other Super Bowl that ever took place, we did it. And I was old enough to remember it and take it all in. Sheer jubilation. Jason, what was your reaction after that last pass fell incomplete?
I was standing right next to my brother. He was shaking. He was absolutely nervous. I was very eerily calm for myself and what everyone knows of me, because it's like, look, it's either going to be, you know, I didn't think the game was going to end. I didn't think it was going to be a bomb. Like, Ben was going to throw a bomb and that was going to be it. But I figured, you know, if they convert, okay, they got to reload and do it again. It didn't occur to me, and I wasn't really thinking like, okay, Pat Lee, we're screwed. We got the wrong guys out there. You know, you still had Collins. You still had Tremont. You still had that pass rush. You still had Clay, Pickett, Raji, all those guys. Like, they had enough. You know, Frank Zombo's the only one that got a sack on Ben that day. They still had enough horses. And it's like, look, this is one play. Anything can happen. Jared Bush has a freaking interception in this game. I have my arm around my brother. We watched the play. And then we just bear hugged afterwards. It was just a phenomenal thing. It had to end that way. Obviously, it didn't, you know, for the Steelers fans, the way they wanted it, but it had to end that way. It was too much to be true. And up to that point, you know, I had kind of experienced 4th-and-26 against the Eagles, and I've seen victories ripped from the jaws of defeat ripped from the jaws of victory, and it was just very disappointing. It was time. It was time. And that's, you know, we learned afterwards what Kevin Green said to Clay Matthews, and it was only fitting. It is time for the Lombardi to come back home, and there you had it.
And it did. It came back home. Tyler, 4th-and-5, we're running a little short on time, but yeah, quick synopsis of, you know, what happens after that play ends.
Yeah, so as I mentioned before, I'm a pretty emotional football spectator, especially when it comes to the Packers. And I, at that point in time, was not doing anything. I just stared at the TV. I guess you'd call it disbelief. Just trying to, like I mentioned before, kind of trying to take everything in, and then having that realization that it's actually going to happen now. And all they got to do is just run out the last few seconds, and the trophy's coming back to Green Bay where it belongs. It was so much to take in at once. And then, you know, once that moment kind of passed, the first thing I did was gave my buddy a big high five, you know, had a big smile, and we were just kind of there enjoying the moment with everybody else.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you think back, obviously the game, the emotions of the game, all that stuff is going to come back to you. My favorite part of it, one, first of all, I mentioned my reaction. I actually have never seen, well, I shouldn't say I've never seen. I never saw the last kneel down because I was an emotional wreck. So I didn't watch that happen. And that's one thing I guess I wish if I could, I would change that. But, I mean, I also remember that night. I had school the next day. Which kind of tells you how long ago this was, but I had school the next day, and I just remember laying in bed, and it was just this huge smile, and I slept perfect that night, but it was something where I went to bed in the same clothes I wore, kind of like what people do after their last game as a senior for whatever sport. They say, you know, you sleep in your uniform. I'll never forget, I had this white Packers hat that I haven't really worn a ton since. I had my Clay Matthews jersey, which is now framed, and a pair of jeans that I wore for every game, and I was just ecstatic. And I went to school the next day. I did change jerseys. I wore my Rodgers jersey to school the next day, and it's unlike anything else. Winning the Super Bowl, obviously, it's what the teams play for. It's what we as fans want more than anything else. But it'll always be very special. And we are actually out of time. I know we were going to talk about more stuff, so I apologize for that. We'll get to more stuff next week. But, I mean, honestly, like we mentioned, you know, winning the Super Bowl is special. Whether it's 1 or 6 or, you know, 13 or whatever the number is, it's special. And I'm never going to pass on a chance to reminisce about that specifically. So thank you guys for listening to today's show. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. Follow the show on Twitter. It's at PackerPulse. You can follow Jason. He's at Jason Perrone. You can follow me. I am at Jacob Westendorf. You can follow Tyler, our guest. He was going to talk defensive lineman today for the T-Said TV draft guide. Tyler, I guess we're just going to have to bring you back on. You did all right. So I suppose we can have you back for that, talk some offense and defensive linemen. Jason, I'm actually watching the American Football Alliance, and Carl Bradford is on my television. So I can't think of a better way to end that, this particular show. Thank you guys, as always, for listening to Pulse of the Pack.
Of the Pack Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.